In the West, we're richer than we've ever been. We've got more leisure time. We tell ourselves we don't, but we actually do. We've got approximately 30 hours a week leisure time after all work and domestic responsibilities have been taken care of. We've got more opportunities. We've got more freedom. And at the same time, we have more divorce, more depression, more burnout, more stress-related illness, and more suicide. In other words, we've got more of everything except fulfillment. What's going on? Well, we actually find the answer in an Old Testament book called Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was written in the 7th century BC. And it's a remarkable description of the relationship between God and the ancient people of Israel. And in a metaphor that is used not only in this book, but all the way throughout the Bible in different ways, Israel, God's people, is described as God's bride, God's wife. And God is described as her devoted husband. He loves her with all of his heart, and she loves him devotedly. She trusts him, and she follows him. And God says in Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 2, I remember the devotion of your youth, how as a bride you loved me and followed me through the wilderness. And that's a picture of what happened when God led his people out of slavery in Egypt. He led them towards a new home, a beautiful new land where they would be free, free to enjoy him forever. And he provided food and water for them as they traveled through the wilderness. But then something devastating happens. God's people abandon God and they chase after other gods instead. To use the language of the Bible, God's bride commits idolatry, which is an act of spiritual adultery, spiritual unfaithfulness. And it's not just a once-off. It's not just a momentary lapse. It happens repeatedly. He loves like a faithful husband, but again and again, God's people give their love to other things instead. They seek satisfaction elsewhere. And the language in Jeremiah is devastating. God says, "You've lived as a prostitute with many lovers." In fact, God's people are shown as worse than a prostitute. A prostitute, after all, is paid for what she does, but God's people went after things which didn't pay. God says in Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns," a cistern is a well, of course, "that cannot hold water." In other words, the things that they traded in for God, the things that they'd exchanged instead of him, they couldn't bring fulfillment. And it's a senseless, a shocking betrayal of the one who loved them so faithfully. But you know, the bigger shock is the realization that this is not just a picture of them, this is a picture of us. We could be, and we should be, enjoying the source of all fulfillment. Our problem is that we don't trust him, and so we seek fulfillment elsewhere. But don't we know from our own experience that, except perhaps for a short time, these things never fill us up? We get the next pay rise, and pretty soon it's not enough. We get that dream wife or husband, and pretty soon they're not enough. We go after these things expecting so much. We go after them expecting that this time, that thing I'm longing for is going to be the final point of arrival. But every time we're just disappointed. There's always the hangover. There's always the morning after. We wake up and we say to ourselves, "This isn't all that I hoped it would be." All our dreams come false. You see, in the metaphor that the Bible uses, looking to these things to try to fulfill us, is like trying to lick up moisture from a dusty, dried up well. They just weren't designed to satisfy in that way. Yet back we go again and again to the same broken systems. So if we crave lasting fulfillment, and all of us do, we need to go to the source. We need to go to the God who describes himself in Jeremiah as the spring of living water. Well, fast forward 700 years from the time of Jeremiah. Jesus sits by a well in a place called Samaria, in that Bible reading that we just heard. A Samaritan woman comes to take water from the well. Now, as a Samaritan, she is a racial and religious outcast in Jewish understanding and values. And as a woman, she has no power and is looked down upon. Yet Jesus reaches out to her. He asks her for a drink. And she's shocked. She says to Jesus, "You are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" And Jesus says something staggering. He tells her, "If you understood who I am, you would be asking me for a drink, and I would be giving you living water." He's identifying himself here with the God who speaks in Jeremiah. He's taking up that metaphor from 700 years earlier. And he's calling himself the spring of living water. But the woman misses it. She's still thinking of literal water. She says, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water?" Jesus says, "Everyone who drinks this water," meaning the literal water in the well, "will be thirsty again." But then Jesus says this, "Whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." You hear what Jesus is holding out to us, all of us. An end to the spiritual thirst that's dogged us all our lives. That never-ending quest for fulfillment. He's saying, don't try to be satisfied with broken, dried-up wells. Career, relationships, material things, they're all good, but they can't quench the deeper thirst. What they are is gifts from the one who can. Come to the source of all these good things. Now, the woman at the well was an outsider, an outcast in every imaginable way. Because of her beliefs, she was a religious outcast. Because of her race, she was an ethnic outcast. Because of her gender, she was a social outcast. And then we learned something else as well. Because of her life choices, she was a moral outcast. You see, the other women would have come to draw their water early in the day when it was cooler. But the text says this woman came to the well alone at midday when the sun was hottest. Why did she do that? Well, most likely it's because none of the other women, even the women from her own community, wanted to associate with her. And Jesus knew why. Without even having to hear it from her, he knows all about her checkered sexual history. And in that culture, to have had three husbands meant that you were written off as an immoral woman. And Jesus says, "I know that you've had five husbands in the past, and the man you're living with now, you're not married to." You can see the significance of that. The woman Jesus spoke to at the well was exactly like Jeremiah's description of God's people. A serial adulteress seeking fulfillment everywhere but in God. Trying to draw water from broken wells that can't ultimately satisfy. And she's so far from God that even her own people refuse to associate with her. But how does Jesus relate to her? With tenderness, with gentleness, with love. He engages with her, he speaks kindly to her, he associates with her, and he crosses all the boundaries that she set up, that her culture set up, All of those boundaries that people said cannot be crossed to reach this woman, Jesus crossed them all. And he does all of this so he can offer her the water that she's really been looking for all her life. And if there's hope for her, can't you see that there's hope for all of us? Well, imagine one day you switch on the TV, it's happened recently, you see a news report about the royal family and your jaw drops in a shocking revelation. Now, this didn't happen, but just imagine for the sake of argument that this happened, right? The palace confirms that one of the royal princes has married a prostitute. Right? And then you see her. She's been living on the streets. She's dealing with a mountain of unpaid debt. So she's homeless. She's hungry and thirsty. She's dirty. There's nothing remotely attractive about her in the world's eyes. And then the camera is cut to an interview with the prince himself. And he says, "I've always loved her. I loved her from the very beginning. And I'll continue to love her regardless of who she is and what she's done. Nothing will separate us." And then the cameras cut away to members of the public. They ask people what they think. And there's an uproar. How on earth can this woman become his wife? How could she ever be the queen after all she's done? It's a disgrace to the entire royal family, not just the prince. Now, in one sense, they're right. There is a social stigma. For the prince to marry her, he has to accept the shame connected with her. He has to accept the taunts from the public. He has to be willing to associate with her, bind himself to her, be joined to her, pay off the debt she can't pay. He has to pay a huge price. But the point here, brothers and sisters, is this is just a tiny glimpse of what Jesus Christ has done for his people, for you and I. God says he chose his people before the creation of the world. He loved them faithfully and he's never stopped loving them, even when they betrayed him and went off with other gods. On the cross, Jesus Christ associated himself with us. He bound himself to us. He paid off the debts that we couldn't possibly pay. He took on our shame and disgrace. He paid a huge price. And not just shame, but punishment. The punishment that we deserve from wandering away from God. Remember, God is holy. Now, in our interpersonal relationships, we can overlook an offense. But somewhere, somehow, at the back of it all, there needs to be an accounting. If there is a standard of justice, that standard must be upheld or it just simply dissolves. Well, God maintained his justice, his holiness, his perfect moral purity, while extending mercy by offering his own son, Jesus, as a substitute in our place to bear the shame, the sin, and the punishment we deserve, and to defeat those things so that we could experience God's mercy and grace and forgiveness. God upheld his justice at the cross and he extended his mercy at the cross. He took on our shame and disgrace. And he gave us salvation. Can you see how much God loves us? And how much that love cost him? Now imagine if we go back to that news report that the camera cuts back to the prince. And he looks straight into the camera and he says, "I know exactly who she is. I know exactly what she's done. But I'm the future king. I marry who I choose to marry." And whatever she may have been, her status changed forever when I married her. Whatever she may have done, she's been welcomed into my family. Everything I have is now hers. I belong to her, she belongs to me. And she will never want for anything ever again. And near the end of John's Gospel, John records what Jesus said just before he died on the cross. Jesus cried out on the cross, "I am thirsty." The spring of living water himself was thirsty so that we would never have to be thirsty again. That's the promise. That's what Jesus offers each and every one of us. Lasting fulfillment, lasting satisfaction.